हरे हे सहनावतु सहनाभुनक्तु सह वीर्यङ्करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिवसदि गौरभक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
So in education, means one has to have an interest to know before one will actually be involved in the activity of learning, right? And having been engaged in the activity of learning, one will naturally apply it. So in this way, then you can get Pranipata Pari Prashna Sevya as Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana, right? It means you're taking the Prajumna aspect. Pranipata, you have a desire. Then Pari Prashna is the process, you know, of interaction between teacher and student. And Sevya is the goal that you will apply it in your life. You'll use it. It will be yours. It'll develop the character, the qualities necessary. At the same time, we can also take it that the sevaya will be the application with the submissive inquiry, right? And then the end result will be there for realization. So the sevaya can be in both categories, in that it is the service. It means the application of the service in one's sadhana, and then by that, then one will get the result of valuing that as your natural activities. Does that make sense? So, in other words, it's something you're going to do. You're not doing it because you're studying. You're doing it because this is what you want to do. Right? So that sevya goes in both places. It'll fit in both places. So it'll be in Abhideya because you are, it means it is a service that you're rendering, but at the same time, as the result is, then you will be involved in that service. Right. In other words, the Abhideya means you're acting with the Gyan aspect. That is your natural activities yourself. That's the Vigyan aspect. Right. Does that make sense? So Shravana Manana Nididhyasana, then we're hearing. Manana is the Gyan, where it means what you're going to intellectually understand it and apply it. Nididhyasana means then realization that has come from it. So that will be, is that the Shravana, because of Shravana, then there's the Pranipata, there's the Pariprashna. Manana means that it will be contemplated, that also includes the Pariprashna, Sevaya, then will be its application in there, Nididhyasana, its realization. But at the same time, is that's also service. But it's gone from basically a sadhana into one's lifestyle. Yes.
Maharaj, you mentioned that menial service is required in order to derive full benefit from our studies. Can you please define menial service and also explain why simply by reading and studying it's insufficient to produce the realization?
Why is insufficient?
One limb of devotional service.
It is one limb. There was once a student, very excellent student, very intelligent. He had learned so much. And he was very... He wanted to learn more, you know, very intellectual. So then he had so much knowledge. And then there was one teacher that he wanted to study from because he knew some branches of knowledge he did not know yet. So he went to this teacher, introduced himself, explained what he had studied and everything, and then said now that he would like to further, you know, study what this teacher had, you know, to offer that was unique. So then the teacher said, fine, you know, let us sit down, you know, first, you know, before we get into serious discussion. And, you know, since you're a guest, first take some water. So he gave a glass to the student. The teacher had a jug of water. He starts pouring the water into the glass. The glass fills up. You know, the student then, you know, the, how you say, the, you know, standard, you know, nod of the head of, you know, that, you know, that's enough, and, you know, thank you very much, then was given by the student, and the teacher keeps pouring water. The glass overflows. He keeps pouring water. By this time, the student is, you know, hey, what's going on? Can't you see the glass is full? Nothing more will go inside, you know? And then the teacher at that time stopped pouring the water, says, exactly. Says, your cup is so full that no more knowledge will go in because you have no humility. So menial service for the brahmacharya is to generate humility. That's the point. Grihastha means the service itself has to generate. He is being directly instructed by authority to perform activities. Performing those activities enthusiastically in that humble mood, that will generate the ability to learn more. Right? Does that make sense? For the grihastha, then, it's not specifically menial service. You can have servants, you can have this and that, because by the nature of the grihastha ashram, he has to be humble in his dealings with the family. Right? And so then he has to use his intelligence very nicely to find out how to behave, what to do. By that humility, then he's able to gain more knowledge. Right? So if his grihastha is proud, thinks he's doing great, he can't learn anything. The grihastha actually understands that even though I may know so much, I know nothing. And so he's always willing to learn and has a humble attitude. He can continue to learn. Right? So the grihastha ashram will also create the environment with which you will learn. Does that make sense? So it doesn't matter the position, but the point is humility must be obtained, because humility is the first item of knowledge. When Krishna describes knowledge, the first quality he gives is humility. Right? I think only one of them is study of books. Study out of 20, one is study of shastra. 19 is one's attitude and one's activities. Does that make sense? So that means this sitting down and studying the book is only a small part of the educational process. Because if you're not prepared, what you'll get from studying that book? Like that. You know, I'm saying before a brahmacharya'd hear once and he'd remember it the rest of his life. That's prepared. Right? Nowadays, there's so many distractions and all that focus is not there. That focus is just not there. So, therefore, as much as we can focus, so the more humble we are, the more we know. Right? And even if we are not great, you know, academic scholars, if we only know something very simple, but we have that purity, that humility, then how we will be able to apply that seemingly small amount of knowledge, that will be unlimited. You know what I'm saying? So through a small one thing, you can understand everything else. By knowing, understanding one grain of rice in a pot, you can understand the nature of all the other grains of rice. Right? So somebody who has a capacity may know all the shastras, but someone who only knows a portion of one, if he knows that perfectly by his humble submissive service attitude, his dedication to Guru, then he'll be able to apply that to everything in his life and others' lives. Just as the scholar, it will take all that body of knowledge to apply that in someone else's life. Does that make sense? Because he knows so many things, and from that total, then you can say he has that much. Right? Because that's his ability to apply because of his service. But the other only has a small, seemingly small, but it, in his life, takes up that same amount. So it has the same effect. You know, because he's getting more out of a little bit, and the scholar is getting less out of many. But you put it together, it's the same volume. Does that make sense? Okay. So four stages of learning. This is from the Naishadam, 1.4. Okay, Aditi, to learn a subject thoroughly. Bodha, to gain insight and proficiency in one's learning. So we see that Adhiti is like Shravana. But just as it's being hearing knowledge from the teacher, and this is to learn a subject thoroughly. The hearing the knowledge means you should hear it and learn it thoroughly. You know what I'm saying? So it's just bringing out different aspects of the same thing. You say hear from the teacher, you could hear and it could go in one ear and out the other. But this is you learn it thoroughly. That means you're hearing, but you're paying attention. Right? Then bodha, to gain insight and proficiency in one's learning. So that's the same, gaining an intellectual understanding through practice and reflection on what is learned. Right? So here's insight and proficiency. Right? So that's your skills, right? So knowledge, skills, and values, right? That's taken directly from this. Like that. Acharan, realizing the purpose of and living according to our learning. So this brings out what nididhyasana is. Right? Acharan means that you follow it. Achar is what you do. Right? Acharya means one who follows that. Prachar means you're talking about or enlightening others on achar. Right? Dichar is to discuss the various aspects of achar. Right? You know, like that, from different angles. What is it? Prachar, achar. Achar, achar.
Sadachar.
Sadachar means you'll practice it yourself, your own personal private practices, like that. There's another one also. I'm not sure. I think it's Archon is also based on the same root, like that. So then. That is the worship done by one who follows this achar. Right? Does that make sense? So it's a very central thing, this practice, like that. So realizing the purpose, because otherwise you know, you gain an insight and proficiency, but here you realize that why it should be there, and living according to our learning. And then prachar, giving this knowledge to others. Right, so that's the fourth step. Also, Srila Prabhupada quotes in the Chaitanya Charitamrita, first in the Adi Lila. I'm not sure where, what chapter, but he also goes through these four stages. And I think he's quoting from either Vamana or one of the Vamana, Varaha, or Vishnu Puran. But he uses slightly different words. But basically is hearing, practicing, realizing, and giving to others. Like that. So it's the same stages of learning. Okay. Any questions on this? Okay. Then next we have the five topics of Bhagavad Gita. Ishvara, Jiva, Prakriti, Kala, and Karma. So we'll go in deep depth in that. But Ishvara means the Supreme Lord. And, his internal potencies or his position as the Lord of all potencies, the Jiva, meaning the Jiva Tattva, Prakriti, meaning the material energy, and how it means the, one is the gross manifestation of it, actually not even gross, subtle, just the manifestation of it, but not necessarily means, but specifically from the aspect of Maya, right? Means we're learning about Ishvara and that how he creates everything. Does that make sense? He does the primary creation, then Brahma does the secondary, and then how everything manifests to us. And so that element then is we're dealing with Ishvara. So Prakriti here is we're specifically talking the material energy and how we're illusioned about it. You know? And then how to convert that back to service to Krishna, right? So then Kala is time, which means activity. So this will then be involved in whatever our activities are, either spiritual or material, depending upon how we see Ishvara and Prakriti. And then karma is going to be the result of those activities, of Kala. Means that you perform material, then you'll either get pious or impious according to what it is, or it's devotional or transcendental, and then you'll get the result of that. Does that make sense? So these are the five topics of Gita. Right? It says right in the introduction, right? That. So these are there. So there's no need of speculating what are the topics. You know, so this is here. So this also we see is Ishwara. It means understanding all these things is Sambandha. In this, then we see is that your karma is going to get you a result. Ishwara Jiva Prakriti, that's also known as Chit Achit Ishwara. Right? Chit meaning what's knowledge, Chit meaning what's real, what has substance, so that'll be the Jiva, the internal potency, but for us it specifically means the Jiva, and we're trying our connection to the internal potency. Achit, the material energy, which is not connected to transcendental, and Ishwara meaning Krishna. Right? So it's also Chit Achit Ishwara. Then you have Kala, karma, will be your activities, you can say. But here specifically, Kala would be karma, and Kala would be the activity, karma would be your result. So then you can get Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana here. Right? So it's a matter of what karma you want. That's why we can say karma yoga and we can be talking about devotional service. We can also say karma yoga and mean that they are using karma along with, you know, some proper understanding and all that, and using it for the process of elevation. But it may be just used for liberation. Right? Does that make sense? Because technically the Ashtanga yoga system is categorized in karma. Like sometimes we say karma gyan yoga, that one must be freed from these and established on the transcendental platform. Sometimes, most of the time, we just say karma and gyan. Because yoga is actually considered karma, right? Because it's using the mind and the senses, like that. So then it goes into that category. It can either be split off or it can be put together. Just like sometimes we'll split the jnana into the impersonalists and the mayavadis, right? The mayavadis are just a write-off. They seemingly follow the impersonalists, but they actually don't. Because the impersonalists, they don't reject Paramatma Bhagavan, they just don't know about it, right? But you explain it to them, they'll accept it, because they're transcendentalists. A Mayavadi, even you explain it to them, they don't want to accept. Because the impersonalist is not trying to be God. The impersonalist, or the Brahmavadi, is everything's God. So God can also be God. They don't have a problem with that. But the Mayavadis, everybody can be God except God. Right? Because I'm God, so like that. You can also be God, but God can't be God. Right? You know? It's a problem. Right? Okay, five topics of the Upanishads. The nature of, so we have five. The nature of Brahman, the nature of the soul, Jivatma, and its relationship with Brahman, the material energy, its origin and connection with Brahman, the means of obtaining Brahman, sadhana, the nature of the supreme goal and status of the jiva in mukti. Right? You get all religions, all philosophies. If you just look at these 5 points, you'll understand everything about them. Like that. That I know of also, this is Upanishads, Bhaktivinoda Thakur. Vivek. Tattva Vivek. What are those? There's three books there. Amnai Sutras. Amnai Sutras is he writes 10 sutras on each one of these. So there's 50 sutras like that to describe these. In other words, he's giving that as the essence of the Upanishads. It could also be used as a form. Is that those 10? Once one of our devotees was Apnatattva, he was discussing with a Jaimini Sutra scholar. That this person, he argued just on Jaimini. He wasn't one of these, you know, Hindu Bindus that everything's mixed. He was a Pukka in the Jaimini Sampradaya, learned that, spoke that, lived that. So then Atmatattva was discussing with him, because sutras are always going to be exact to the point and all that. So he'd make his point, Atmatattva would make his according to the Samnai Sutra, which is based on these five topics of the Upanishads. And then after some time, then the Jaimini scholar, then he said, what is your skeleton? You know, what form are you using? Because you have some form here. Because most people, they talk, I have no something here, there, they put it together. He says, everything you say is consistent, it's in a specific form. What is it? So then he explained to them this Amanai Sutra. So here we see is that it's the same elements that is same in Gita, because Gita is Upanishad, Gita Upanishad. Gita Upanishad Gavo Dogda Gopalanandana. So the nature of Brahman is Ishwara, right? The nature of the soul and its relationship with Brahman is Jiva. The material energy, its origin and connection with Brahman is Prakriti. The means of obtaining Brahman sadhana is the Irkala. And the nature of the supreme goal and status of the Jiva and Mukti is karma. Right? So Ishwara, Jiva, and Prakriti, those are eternal. This Kala and karma are temporary. Right? The principles are always there, but their effect on us is temporary. So then we're acting not on material time and material karma, we're working on transcendental time, transcendental karma. Does that make sense? Like that. So that's the point. The Upanishad, the Gitas, the Upanishads are trying to get us to that position. Does that make sense? That's what it's trying to do for us. Okay, so all things can be brought back into that. We'll revisit. Did we do... Actually, we didn't. The Dasamuhl. Okay. I think at this point, we could bring that up. Okay, so now, we see here is that you're dealing with basically all founded around three. Sometimes there's three aspects, four here, Upanishads, five. So they keep moving depending upon the perspective. Now, Lord Chaitanya has given an expansion of this Sambandhavidaya and Prayojana that includes everything, all these details called the Dasamuhl. So that specifically then, Bhaktivinoda Thakur, documented that because it was known, but it wasn't written. No one had put any book together on it because it was just like standard, you know, like... You know, we just think about japa means 108 beads, and they go from big to small, and they fit in the bag, and like that. You know, you don't think about it, so no one thinks to write that down. So the Dasamuhl was very common. So it wasn't written like that. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur, when he was saying that it wasn't understood so much like that, then he wrote this down. So that will be part of our studies, is this Dasamuhl. So basically in there is, you're taking these principles and expanding it to 10. So in this then, the Sambandhigyan, or the Chit Ishwara, the God, the living entity, the material nature, that is expanded out into 7 points. Then Abhideya stays as 1 point, Prayojana stays as 1 point. Right? Then another additional point is there is from Sambandha is there has to be a basis of all this knowledge. Right? So that is the Shastra, that's the Veda. Right? So that authority, then from that authority, from Shabda, then you're going to get all the in other words, that's Praman or authority. Right? Evidence. And then Prameyas are those which are proved by that authority, Praman. Right? So then he breaks down these elements of the Ishwara. Then you get, he has three aspects. You know, he'll have, he's the, you know, origin of everything. Right? He is the, you know, so that means all-knowing, all, you know, all-cognizant, all-present, all these kind of, all this, you know, all this, all that qualities. He is the Lord of all his different energies. Right? And he is the Lord of Rasa. Right? So in this, it will be seen as that we have the 9 Prameyas and we have the Dasamuhl. They're basically exactly the same thing. The difference is that the Dasamuhl is all-encompassing because it includes Rasa. Well, the Nava Prameyas, which is like you're basically what's used for like Vedanta Sutra and other things, or that kind of line of Shastra, is meant for dealing with those who haven't necessarily accepted. So those doubts have to be removed. So the Upanishadic will deal with 9. Your Bhagavatam will deal with 10. Right? Because Bhagavatam is for those who have already accepted the philosophy. They want to go deeper. They want to remove the, you know, what anarthas are there. But they're committed to that study and lifestyle. Does that make sense? So these will come up in these different places of study. So then, and then the jiva, you have the soul itself, you have that they are conditioned, means of three categories, conditioned, liberated, and fortunate. Fortunate means those who are conditioned souls who are in the process of becoming liberated. Right? Then you have a chinta beta beta tattva. And then you have the material energy. So this way, then you end up with seven aspects there. Okay? Does that make sense? It's basically the same thing, just expanded a little bit. Like that. And so then all these will be covered in there. So nature of Brahman, so here's as one point, Dasamula is 3 points. Right? Does that make sense? Like that. So it's just making it more clear. Okay, yes. Bhagavad Arka Marichi Mala means these 10 states, means the, how you say, 8 of them means that the Sambandha Gyan remains exactly as it is because it's been fully expanded in the Upanishads and in Bhagavad Gita. Now it, what it does is it expands, you get 4, means one expands into 4 in Shruti, or that means Shabda, your authority. And then the Abhideya expands, I forget how many. And then the Prayojana expands. So because the Bhagavatam then, because now we've established the Sambandha, now the Abhideya Prayojana can be also fully expanded. Because Gita is basically saying that you should do devotional service, you should have this proper mentality of naishkarmya, that it should be done as, you know, service to Krishna, you should perform your duties, right? Because it's part of Mahabharata. Mahabharata is establishing how to perform your duties, you know, what is the Vedic. The essence of the Vedic literatures is in the Mahabharata. Right? You've written the whole Mahabharata. Now, one, how do you know what is the essence? And two, how do you give that essence to someone who's not going to study all those shastras? Therefore, Mahabharata. It's in story form, very interesting. Everybody likes to hear it. Stories everyone likes, right? From the children and the family members to the scholars, everyone likes a good story. Right? At the same time as in those stories, everything can be put. Right, and so then in there, then the Gita, then that gives the essence of that. So proper performance of your duties, with proper knowledge, with detachment, you know, thinking of Krishna to please Krishna, and that's, you know, that is then taking that whole process and everything. In other words, everything comes together as this devotional process. That's Buddhi Yoga. Does that make sense? Anything else? Okay. Then 5 levels of consciousness. We understand what we're doing here. We're just becoming familiar with these things, so when they come up later, you're not bewildered. Right? So keep this around for a while, you know, until you're very familiar, because all these terms, because at different times, different examples or different formulas will be used. These different systems like that. So this is giving that the course itself has the freedom to use all these things very, very comfortably, right? Like that. So when because this Bhagavad Gita study, this is the foundation, it is the basis, but it's not kid stuff. You know what I'm saying? Like that is very serious, very deep study, like that. So that means then the Bhagavatam is deeper than that. You know, that's the idea. Okay, 5 levels of consciousness. Okay, now here's another, Prabhupada talks about this. And then there's 2 aspects, the levels of consciousness and the levels of acquiring knowledge. They go together. Like these, they're all like these parallel things. They're the same thing, but described from a different point of view. So you have anamoy, pranamoy, manamoy, vijnanamoy, anandamoy. Sometimes manamoy is also called jnanamoy. So you have jnana and vijnanamoy. Because manamoy is the platform of religiosity. Right? That platform of religiosity means acting according to nature, means performing prescribed duties, means they must be done with knowledge, jnan, and, you know, activity. You know, the religion. So it can be manamoy, meaning it's the mind and the senses that is applying what's there, or jnanamoy, meaning that the intelligence is being used along with that mind and senses. Does that make sense? So either can be used like that. But the point is, the central point is the mind here. like that. But intelligence is used with it. So that is also, as before, what we were studying, means your manana. Right? Manana is the intellectual understanding through practice and reflection. Right? Or bodha, to gain insight and proficiency in one's learning. So it's all the same, it's the same platform. Right? Because the brahmachari, his position is to hear and practice. Right? That's his dharma. So that's where that will come there. Right? So that's where everything's happening. It's a central point. That's why it starts dharma, artha, kama, moksha. You could start, you know, being logical, you go moksha, dharma, artha, kama. Right? Or if you're talking about getting out of here, you go kama, artha, dharma, moksha. No, but it goes dharma, artha, karma, moksha. It's never said in any other way. Right? Why? Because the central point is dharma. From dharma, you can go towards moksha. Or from dharma, you can go to artha and kama. Right? And having gone artha and kama, you'll come back to moksha. So you can either, pravriti, dharma, artha, kama, then moksha, or nivriti, dharma, moksha. Right? Does that make sense? Pravriti means the path of, engaging the senses. Nivriti means the path of not engaging the senses. Like that. In other words, it basically means, in broad terms, you know, brahmachari, grihastha, brahmachari, vanaprastha, sannyasa as nivriti, grihastha as pravriti. But within that, what's recommended by Krishna is that grihastha life is also nivriti, because you're engaging all those aspects not for your sense gratification. You're engaging in sense gratification not for your sense gratification. You're engaging in sense gratification to engage the senses in the Lord's service and get an intellectual understanding, you know, this bodha and manana of what's actually going on. Right? So it's a practice. You're supposed to become expert at it. Right here, you know, insight and proficiency in one's learning. In other words, you've heard that this is how you're supposed to deal in family life and with material energy and money and all these things. Now you do it, you know, like that. Like Arjuna hears that he's supposed to engage in this battle in a particular consciousness. Now he does it. Right? Does that make sense? So now he does it. So that's the point. And he's a grihastha, so it's not a problem. It's just a matter, the question for the devotee is just which path is more suitable for him, which path will keep him fully engaged. Right? If you don't need a family to keep body, mind, and words fully engaged in the Lord's service, why would you have one? You're already engaged. Why add something that's going to distract from full engagement? But if engaging, you know, without the family, the body, mind, words is not fully engaged, then therefore family life is to take up that gap, right? Whatever the slack is, that will take it up easily. You know what I'm saying? You know, and probably more than what you expected. I got this little part right here I need to deal with, so we'll just add in this what happened here. And that we were just talking about the saris. We were not talking about other things like that. So. And that's one shelf, right? You can only put so many on a shelf, or the bar will bend. So it's only that much, and then the next shelf, like that. Okay. We'll stick to the point here. Amnaya. Okay. Not. No. That's anamaya. Okay. Does that make sense? How all these things, they're all interconnected. We're only dealing with this point the Gita is making. Engaging yourself fully in the Lord's service, body, mind, and words. That's all that's being discussed, right? And that engagement, that is austerity, right? And that you're doing it as naishkarmya with knowledge, that's sacrifice, right? Does that make sense? So that's the element of sacrifice. Then the results of that are given away. They're given to Krishna. Either you've given it beforehand, naishkarmya, or after you get it, sakam. Right? Either way, it's given away. Right? So that's charity. Does that make sense? So therefore, what's it? Austerity, sacrifice, and charity These are always to be performed. They just may have different, details of application. Does that make sense? You know, you give money because that's valuable, or you give some time, but eventually you're supposed to give your life and everything that your and all your activities and everything it performs. In other words, body, mind, and words are given. And so whatever that produces, that's given to Krishna. So that's your charity. Body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's service for His satisfaction. That is your sacrifice. Body, mind, and words are engaged in the Lord's sacrifice according to, you know, what is the appropriate way of dealing according to your position in relationship to the Lord. That's your austerity. So we see is that that element of completeness is what we're trying for. So in the beginning, okay, it's a little austere, we fast half a day. That's austerity. You know, we take that as austere. Oh, it's hot out today and I still got to, that's austere. That is an aspect of austerity, but the real point is, why should you be fasting? That's the austerity. That you're fasting because that's your duty. Right? Then, that duty naturally has difficult aspects. It has nice aspects also. Taking prashad is not a bad thing. You know, like that. So, but that's also an austerity. It's a duty that you must perform. So therefore, prashad is accepted. You know, so very difficult austerity, you know, eating all that nice prashadam, like that. Yes?
Back to the point of prachar and acharan. Mm-hmm. Prachar is the fourth one. So does that mean the result of our study will be we preach, or is it an activity, an abhideya?
It's both. It's a result that we're going to come to that platform of teaching. But as vigyan, it will be the platform from which we will live. So it comes to the... means many of these things, they have their position when they are working on it, and then they can switch positions, or they hold dual positions. Just like any goal you have then becomes part of the sambandha once it's attained. Because the sambandha is your field of activities. So once you've attained a goal, it becomes part of your field of activities. Then the next activity can be performed on the expanded goal, sambandha, right? He has no house. Now he has a house, so that becomes part of his field. Now in the house, he can do so many things. And then you get those things, and then you add, and you understand? So Prabhupada therefore explains, Aniruddha always then moves back to Prajumna, right? Because that's his source. Right? You understand? And that Prajumna is based on Sankarshan, because that's his source. Right? But the whole point is performance of activity, because Vasudeva ultimately is the source.
Right.
You know. At the same time, you can also take it that in the because you have both explanations of the creation, is that after Krishna expands to Balaram, Balaram to Mahanarayan, Mahanarayan expands into Mahasankarshan. Right? And then from Sankarshan, then you get Prajumna, Adiruddha, and Vasudev. Right? Vasudev comes on his own, and then Prajumna is separate, and Aniruddha. You know what I'm saying? So you have Sankarshan, then Prajumna, Adiruddha. And then from Sankarshan, you get Vasudev. Right? That's also your means, if you look at it in this Dharma, Artha, Kama, and Moksha, the Dharma, that's Sankarshan. He establishes religious principles. From him comes Artha and Kama. Right? So Prajumna, Adiruddha come from him. At the same time also, then the other way, Vasudev comes. Right? Because Vasudev Sattva, that's a liberated position. Right? Does that make sense? So all Prajumna, it means that attraction to be involved in there and all those things. And then Aniruddha, the senses engaged in the sense objects. So it also is, everything comes out like this. Does that make sense?
Yeah.
Right. Then, so that's one way to explain. And generally that's how we deal, because after that, that's how it's functioning. But at the same, so in that way then, based on the field of activities, having attraction to it, having a need for it, therefore then one will engage in the activity, Vasudev. So therefore Sankarshan, Vasudev is coming from Sankarshan. Right. The other way is that you put, because we're talking about the original, means originally there's Vasudeva, there's Krishna. Mm-hmm. Then he expands Balaram. Mm-hmm. After that, it's the other way around. all other Vasudevs after that are actually expanded from Sankarshan, from Baladev.
Yeah.
So Krishna in Dwarka is actually an expansion of Balaram.
Yeah.
But his mood is that of Krishna.
Okay.
You know? And then Balaram will have his mood, Prajumna will have his mood, Vasudeva, I mean, Aniruddha will have his mood.
I see.
You understand?
Yeah.
But so this is the other aspect is, okay, but all this is there, why is it there? Because Vasudeva wants to perform, have interaction or pastimes with his devotees.
Mm-hmm.
So to do that, then you need a field of activities. Then Sankarshan comes. Then that field is very nice, there's an attraction, like we see in the Krishna book, that Krishna goes out, he's walking with the devotees, and he's commenting about how nice it is. Or let's take the one, the tenth guy, he goes out and he sees the moon, you know, the night and the moon, the full moon and the bright light and the mood in the forest and the air that's there and the season and that. And he thinks, this is a perfect time for the rasa dance. So that means Sankarshan was there, inspired by that, he became attracted, and then he has the need. Then he plays his flute, the gopis come, then there's rasa dance. Understand? So the whole process is working there. Right? So that's there, but who created, you know, all that? He did, for the purpose of rasa.
Yeah.
So that's why you can explain it both ways. Both are true.
Mm-hmm.
Yes, sir.
So Maharaj, could you say that looking at it from Tattva, then it'll all expand from Sankarshan, and then looking at it from Rasa, it'll start with Vasudeva?
In one sense you could, but at the same time in Rasa it'll still go that way. In other words, I would have a tendency, if you look at it from, it would be another one that I don't think we have on here, because generally that would come later, but we can put it on there, like that. Is not here. Okay. Is Sarvagya and Mukdata. These are moods of Krishna. Sarvagya means he knows everything. You know, in other words, every last atom, you know, from Golok Vrindavan, he knows everything everywhere down to the little atom, the little grain of sand you're sitting on now. Right? He knows everything. Mukdata means he himself, by his own will, puts himself under his own yoga maya, so he doesn't know all of this. He only knows that he's the son of Maharaj Nanda, and like that, right? So in other words, from the one you could say is that it's coming like that, from the others, and you can say, you know. So he has that desire for that, therefore he's arranged it like that. The other one is then he doesn't know, and then he is just seemingly as affected by the situation as everybody else is. You know, but at the same time, even in those two, they both contain both, because of his desire for rasa. Therefore, then he expands the others. You know what I'm saying? So, in other words, the position and the rasa is not a separate entity in Krishna. That's why it says he and his energy are non-different. But even though he's the lord of Sat, you know, of eternality, it doesn't mean that he's not also the lord of the, you know, Ananda and Chit. It's just that for him to enjoy that, therefore he gives those categories to someone else. So even though he's technically Sambandha, everybody's based on him. Balaram is the Chit potency, you know, which is the Abhideya, and Radharani is the Hladini potency. Right? Like that. But at the same time, as he moves to the position of Vasudev and Balaram moves over here. That's why the principles of knowledge are both in Sambandha as Prajumna and also in Abhideya as Vasudev. Because you perform your activity with knowledge. But it's knowledge of how to make the activity work right, not knowledge of why I should do it and that kind of thing. You understand? It's a different aspect. The Sambandha is, I should be doing this, is the right thing to do, you know, like that. So how to do that, that will be your Abhideya. I mean, doing it is your Abhideya, using intelligence, okay, this is better now, this is this. Does that make sense? So it's two different aspects, like that. Oh yeah, that's right, we're going to do the Kalyana Gunas. Yeah, we'll have to get that out. Okay, does that make any sense on that? Is there any other questions on this? Yes.
So it's basically same person must not remember that they are all the same person, but according to what mood the Lord takes up.
That's it. There's only one Lord. Krishna is one person. He just, according to mood, he expands, and then it's explained. We'll come across that depending upon the mood, then there's ones that means Krishna expands, like he's with the gopis. They're exactly the same Krishna, like that. They're not somebody else. They don't have a different mood, right? Or like Krishna, I think it would be, yeah, they look the same. Or he expands and they actually have a different mood, like Balaram or Narayan. Same person, just different mood. Does that make sense? You know, like that. So that's the thing. Like you have the high court judges at home. So he has different expansions of the home, but they're the same. You know, him with his wife, him with the kids, him with his close friends, him just kicking around the house on his own. But it's still him and just tasting different aspects. But he has to do it separately, while Krishna can do all of them at once. Right? But when he goes to the office, he goes to the court, that's a different mood. You know what I'm saying? So that's the whole point, is that, you know, Krishna at home or Krishna at the office. Right? So Vaikuntha is the office. Yes.
So basically then, in the beginning Krishna is alone, and then he has his moods, and then these moods, they...
He manifests these moods, therefore you get all this broad variety. Like that. Because, see, that's the thing, is all the moods are there in Krishna. That's why he's black. Because all rasa is there. But, you know, but there's that same oneness again when he wants to specifically just taste the conjugal rasa. Right? So therefore he's golden. So it's a one, but it doesn't contain all the others. It is there, but they're in their hidden form. Like there you'll see he'll manifest as Varaha or this or that, Lord Chaitanya. But then that's more as Gaur Narayan. Like a Yogpi, you have Gaur Narayan with Vishnu Priya and Lakshmi Priya. Then you have Lord Chaitanya as non-different from Radha Krishna, Sri Krishna, you know, Madhava. You know, I mean, Sri Krishna Chaitanya Radha Krishna Nayana. Then he has Lord Chaitanya as the Pancha Tattva, like that. So those are the deities established by the Acharya. So those are the three views we have of him. Does that make sense? So as Narayana is doing that, but his main point is where he's come is to taste as Radha and Krishna. These others are secondary. So that's why he goes from one to two back to one. Because if you've manifested the two, then the one makes sense. You know what I'm saying? If you interact, then the one, then that intimacy of that, from based on that interaction. You know, in other words, it's an element of rasa. Well, the first one is it's tattva. Krishna is one, that's tattva, everything is there. But Krishna is one as Lord Chaitanya, that's his rasa. It means he's tasting the rasas. The other one, he's Atmarama. You know, so he's only tasting that much. The other one, then he's tasting the Adi rasa, which will have, of course, all the taste of everything, but that's the difference. Like that. Does that make sense? Okay, so we'll end here. Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Jai.